From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox in for Farai Chidea. The presidential candidates took a little time off from campaigning during the holidays, very little in fact, but with only days left until the Iowa caucuses, they are now back in full effect. To talk more about the candidates and how they are faring in the Hawkeye State, we have Mary Frances Berry, a professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania, and Ron Christie, vice president of the lobbying group DC Navigators. He is also a former special assistant to President George W. Bush. Ron, Mary, welcome to the show.
Thank you, and happy Kwanzaa.
Happy Kwanzaa and Merry
nice
Christmas
to be with you.
And all of that to the both of
yes.
you. Let's start with the Democrats first, and then we'll go to the Republicans second. The top three Democratic candidates are neck and neck right now as the Iowa caucuses quickly approach. Mary, for you, did any of them do anything over the holiday that may have given them a boost?
Nothing happened over the holiday to boost anybody. Nobody made a big mistake. Nobody did anything to really pull ahead. And also, I don't like to just talk about the top three because I have a hunch one of those people who are down in number four, five, or six may come in and pull an upset and come in one, two, or three. But in any case, the main thing that's happening in Iowa is they're all running around like crazy now, campaigning at the last minute, but the weather is going to be the biggest factor. The weather, because it depends on whether there's a big snowstorm and folks who are students can get back to vote, and it's legal for them to vote. It's going to depend on whether somebody has whoever rented the most SUVs and has all the trucks locked up with rentals and can get their people out to the caucuses if there's a snowstorm. If it's sunny weather, then that changes the whole dynamic. So there's not much the candidates can do right now unless one of them really, really makes a big mistake in the next few days to change what's going to happen. And I also think, Tony, that unless there's a wipeout in the caucuses, that is, somebody really wins big and the other people are just down to nothing, and if they come in really close, it won't make that much difference as we go to New Hampshire. We'll still be stuck.
Let me bring Ron in on the conversation because, Ron, new television ads by an outside labor-backed organization were aired for the first time yesterday in Iowa. Now, these ads are apparently aimed at giving John Edwards a boost, even though he and Obama have both complained about such groups, which are known as 527s because of the tax code designation that they operate under. Does any of that matter, these ads?
I think it does. I think when you're right on the cusp of the first caucus in the nation and talking about Iowa and the Hawkeye State, it all amounts to turnout. And as Mary alluded to a few moments ago, it's going to be very important for the candidates to have the best organization and hope for very good weather so that they can load up the buses and send people to the different caucus areas so they can cast their ballot. As it relates to Senator Edwards, John Edwards is in a very unique position right now. Senator Clinton and Senator Obama are so focused on each other, and they seem to be targeting a lot of their resources towards each other. John Edwards is in a very unique position because he's just on the cusp of becoming the front runner in Iowa, and some polls have put him in the lead. If Clinton and Obama continue to focus on each other and Senator Edwards can get the turnout and he can have positive air experiences, be it some of these campaign ads or positive mailing pieces, and he can get his folks out, he can win, and then that will entirely change the dynamic of this race moving forward.
Here's one more thing about the Democrats. Here's a name for you, Al Sharpton. We'll be talking about him a little bit more in the blogger segment, which is coming up. But, Mary, it seems he is a quote-unquote player in the race for the presidential nomination, especially with fellow Democrats who are blowing up his phone, seeking his endorsement. He hasn't given one yet, by the way. How do you explain Sharpton's influence?
Oh, it is absolutely simple to answer this question. People who think Sharpton shouldn't have any influence because Obama happens to be African-American don't understand that there were black people inside the Kennedy, John Kennedy's administration, but that didn't mean there was no need for Martin Luther King or for any of the civil rights people. I think that until we get to a place where most African Americans and other people of goodwill believe that race problems are entirely resolved, there will always be a role to play when these events occur, like Jenna and other kinds of highly publicized events for somebody. And Al Sharpton happens to have the biggest mouth and the biggest presence and all the rest of it right now. And the candidates know this. They know what their African-American constituency, even people who don't like, you know, Al Sharpton for various reasons, they see the need for some kind of advocate. So I can see that there's a role for him or for somebody to play, despite the fact, even if Obama won the presidency, there'd still be a role for somebody outside, somebody as an advocate, somebody to speak up to bring pressure to bear.
Well, would you say, Ron, that an endorsement by Al Sharpton is substantive, whoever may get it?
I don't know how substantive it is. I think it's a stamp of a seal of approval from the so-called black leadership that Reverend Sharpton provides, apparently. But again, I think that the most influential type of political individual who's African-American these days is someone like a Barack Obama, someone like Deval Patrick, the governor of Massachusetts, someone who's been elected to office and has experience. But there's no question, looking at that article from the Washington Post today, that for better or worse, Al Sharpton is still a force to be reckoned with.
Interesting. We'll keep an eye on that. Let's move on to the GOP and talk about the fact that Mitt Romney, Mike Huckabee, competing for the vote of the Christian right with mixed results so far. Even John McCain is beginning to show life again, albeit in New Hampshire. Ron, to follow up with you, what's happening with the Republicans in Iowa, and how is the Christian vote figuring into these last few days of campaigning there?
Well, I tell you, if you looked at the political conventional wisdom from just a few weeks ago, you would have said Mike Huckabee has a chance. Governor Huckabee has been able to galvanize a lot of the evangelical Christian support in Iowa to his advantage, and the once seemingly formidable lead held by former Governor Mitt Romney has been chipped down to not only the size of the margin of error, but Governor Huckabee is expected now to win in Iowa. What this does for the contest, I think, Tony, takes you very, very interestingly enough into the heart of what the Republican Party's future is going to be. The Republican Party in the past was very much dominated by the Christian Coalition and the evangelical Christian part of the base. But moving forward to New Hampshire, South Carolina, Michigan, states where their influence perhaps is not as great as what it used to be, it'll be interesting to see if Governor Huckabee holds on to win, what that will mean for Governor Romney and Senator McCain in these other states where the role of the evangelical is not as strong.
Well, Mary, one of the issues with regard to Huckabee is money. How much does he have? Today he is out pheasant hunting, and he is supposed to be stumping for some additional cash. So even if he does win in Iowa, does he have the money to hang on?
If Huckabee wins in Iowa, the money will flow in like crazy for people who support him, who think that he has a shot, despite what Ron said, the way they see it. And there are lots of evangelicals in all of these states. They may not be sufficient to carry the day in some, and some of them have money. And so people who support him as an alternative, if he wins Iowa, that's the key. It's just like if Edwards wins Iowa. If he wins Iowa, then he can move on. But I do think it's amazing, too, that where he's come from to be talked about seriously and now to be ahead. But I almost must tell you that I predicted weeks ago that McCain was going to come back to life. And I see that he's done that. And I think even if Huckabee wins in Iowa, McCain will probably win in New Hampshire if that happens, and that may cut him off at the pass.
Well, certainly if the Concord Monitor newspaper in New Hampshire has anything to say about it, Romney will not be winning there. They're calling him in an editorial that's been widely distributed a phony who, quote, must be stopped. This grazes the tip of the editorial iceberg, doesn't it, Ron? How hurtful is an anti-endorsement like this?
Well, it doesn't help someone like Governor Romney right now. Governor Romney has long predicated his strategy on winning in Iowa, New Hampshire, Michigan, South Carolina, the early contests. Senator McCain has shown a remarkable resilience in the last month or so, and he's picked up the endorsements of influential papers in Iowa and New Hampshire and around the country. And these are the sort of things that once folks thought, gosh, does John McCain have a chance? And they think, yeah, maybe he does. That increases his financial coffers. That increases his ability to get on the air and influence the process. And don't forget, Senator McCain won the New Hampshire primary in 2000, and he thoroughly dominated that contest over former Governor George W. Bush. And it'll be interesting to see, for those constituents who had such a strong fervor and following for Senator McCain then, whether they come out and vote for him now. Iowa is a must for Mitt Romney. New Hampshire is a must for Mitt Romney. And I think, as Mary and I have discussed, you see an opening with Governor Huckabee in Iowa and Senator McCain in New Hampshire. It's going to be a very interesting contest that it's going to be very hard to predict at this point.
And keep in mind, too, that Romney has so far been using mostly his own money. He's been spending his own money.
Which he has a lot of.
Right. And if he doesn't win in Iowa and he doesn't win in New Hampshire, what does he do? Just keep on spending his own money to see if he can win somewhere? It's very problematic.
Let me ask this last question. We have about a minute. And 2008 will be an opportunity for this country to find out whether or not the impact of Iowa and New Hampshire has been changed by the fact that we have all of these other upcoming primaries early in the state, early in the calendar, including California in February. What do you think this will do? Will we see something different, Ron, as it relates to the impact of Iowa and New Hampshire?
I don't believe we will. I think historically Iowa and New Hampshire have been a springboard to galvanize money, interest, support, and the horse race that those of us who participate in the media like to look at the scorecard. I think that Iowa and New Hampshire this year will be very, very closely watched, and the candidates that emerge victorious from those two early contests, it will really do a lot to propel their candidacies moving forward.
I've got 10 seconds for you, Mary. You agree with that?
I think that Iowa and New Hampshire will still remain ahead of the pack, but I think there'll be some juggling with the schedule so that we don't have to keep campaigning right through Christmas.
Mary, Ron, thank you both so much.
Tony, pleasure. Happy New Year.
Same to you. Mary Frances Berry is a professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania. She joined us from New Orleans. And Ron Christie is vice president of the lobbying group DC Navigators. He joined us from our NPR studios in Washington.